This is Facility Rockstars, the podcast that celebrates the unsung heroes of our daily lives, facility professionals. I'm your host, Jay Culbert. Join me as we honor these great leaders, sharing stories, insights, and expertise that empower us all to learn and grow together. Facility Rockstars is sponsored by Colutus, operating the way you operate in order to make your life easier.
Welcome to Facility Rockstars. I'm your host, Jay Culbert, and I'm thrilled to introduce our guest today. So I've known him for, I think it's going on over 7 years now. We've worked together for over 7 years, and you know, we've got a lot of common interests, which is always awesome to have with people you see so often. He brings over 12 years of experience and knowledge in facilities management. He's worked in general facilities, pharmaceutical, and aerospace manufacturing environments. He's always seeking to find new ways to improve process and share those improvements with those around him. And with all this, he still finds time to get out in nature, enjoy time with his family and friends. He's a plant engineer at Albany International Corporation. And Shane Verity, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jay. How's it going? Thanks for having me today.
It's going great, man. Thank you for being here. Thank you for taking the time.
I appreciate it. I think this is a really cool thing that you're putting together, and I'm happy to be part of it.
Awesome. Well, I'm grateful that you are. That's very cool of you. And did I get the time frame right? I meant to check. I think, was it seven, you know, 8 years?
I was thinking about that earlier today, and I really couldn't put a number on it, but it has to be 7 or 8 years at this point. I know we've been going back and forth for quite a while, so that sounds about right.
All right. All right, good. All right, it was close.
Yeah.
Well, I've learned a lot from you through the years, Shane, and one thing that I've really respected, and I have a question I'd like to ask you here, but one thing I've noticed is your thirst for knowledge around new technologies and things like that, and it's just awesome, and maybe we can touch on that in our discussion. But what I really wanted to ask you is, like, you know, through all of these years of experience that you have, what has been your biggest lesson learned in facility as a facilities manager or a plant manager?
So I think the biggest thing is that it's so unpredictable, right? And no matter what you try and put any kind of structure around it, it's very unpredictable. And so it really just lends itself to two major abilities. And I think it's more of a personal trait almost more than a skill. And that's, you know, agility and adaptability, really. You have to be able to just take changes as they come and pivot where you stand and just take off and run in another direction. I really think that that's the key to it. If you can't embrace changes like that, then it'll really it'll eat you up.
That's a good way to be, because things will always change, right?
And so it's funny. Somebody recently said to me that the only constant that we have is change in our industry.
And that in facilities, or specifically like at Albany, or
so at Albany, I think overall, but I think it really comes down to like facilities. I mean, facilities is always changing, right? The new technologies, the new projects that we're embracing, and just the overall how you manage your facility. It's always changing. We're always going in different directions. We have new requests. We have new projects. It never stops. I think that's a lot of the fun of it, to be honest with you. I could never imagine being that person that just sits and does the same thing every single day. It would kill me. I really think that ability to just jump and change direction and learn something new and take in something every day is a lot of fun.
That's a good outlook on it too. I like what you said. I think you said pivot where you stand.
Yep, absolutely. Right. I mean, you have to be running 100 miles an hour and just change direction 90 degrees and take off in another one. I can't tell you how many times I've gone to a meeting and prepared for 2 or 3 days for something, and then everyone's like, all right, that's great, but we realize we can't do that. We have to go this direction. And it's like, okay, throw out everything we've been doing and let's start from the top.
So yep.
If you let that get to you, you know, it gets very discouraging, but I like the challenge of it. I think it's a lot of fun.
Sounds like a great mindset. Really does. You know, I'll tell you, let me jump back. It must be 2, maybe even 3 months ago now. And I hope you don't mind me sharing this story, but I called you one day and I said, hey, you know, I don't know what I was asking you. It doesn't really matter. And I said, you know, how's your day going? And I think you said, correct me if I get it wrong, I think these were the bullets, though. Well, Jay, let me tell you, you know, we've had 3 sewage backups this week. You know, my head of security, I don't remember if Shane either left the company or got promoted or something happened. And now that position's open. So I'm doing that too. And oh, by the way, yeah, one of my drop ceilings, you know, fell through because I had a roof leak. And did I get that somewhat accurate, Shane?
Yeah, it's pretty accurate. She transitioned to a new position within our company, but, you know, no longer supporting me directly. And everything else is pretty spot on. Multiple sewage backups, ceiling collapse in a pretty critical room. And yeah, it was a cluster, I think was the word that you laughed at when I said that.
Yes.
You know, that's the essence of facilities, right? It's a cluster.
Yes.
But we manage it. We take it in and divide and minimize. That's always kind of how I've looked at stuff like that. You have 3 different major situations. Just divide them. Then separate them all. Minimize what's the quickest, easiest thing that you can get done. Get one out of the way. What's the next quickest, easiest thing you can get done? Get that out of the way and move forward.
Basically, stay on task is what I'm hearing.
Kind of, but I mean, to stay on task, right? Sometimes if you overanalyze it, you get stuck in the analysis paralysis phase. And if you look at all that, right? If anyone looks at that, you know, I have 3 sewage backups. I have a ceiling that's now on the floor and it's soaking wet. You know, it's easy to get very overwhelmed with that. You just got to kind of divide it, try and make it 3 separate segmented problems and just focus on the first one.
So that's a unique way. That's a great way to look at it. Where did you learn that skill? How did you get to that
place? That's funny. So this is one of those little tiny nuggets of something that stuck with me for a long time. I got that from my driver's ed instructor.
Oh, wow.
Believe it or not. And that's, you know, going down the road, there's a million things going on. You have to divide and minimize. You have to look at every single thing that's happening and address each one of them one at a time. And what's the least threat? What's the biggest threat? And take them as they come.
What an awesome example of learning.
It's amazing the little things that stick with you, right? And all the hours that we spent in class. And that's probably the only direct quote that I could recite from that.
That's phenomenal. That's truly lifelong learning. It's like, wow. And you pulled that from what you were probably 15 years old, right? And I think that's when we take it. Yeah. Oh, wow. That's awesome. Anything like, I guess any best practices, and I think you've probably already shared a lot about it, but I love your agility, adaptability, you know, ability to pivot. Any like best practices that you could share with the audience, you know, that they might be able to implement?
Best practices for facilities management overall?
Well, you've shared, I think, whether it was the way to retain information so you can quickly access it. And that's one thing I'm remembering through our previous discussions throughout the years. Anything like that, Shane, like things that you've put in place?
I mean, I think, you know, I've always struggled with organization. And I'm one of those people, like I'm highly OCD, and yet I struggle to organize things the way that I like it. And so I've learned over the years, and it was very hard for me to implement, but a robust file structure is huge. And naming conventions, naming everything the same so that when you start cycling through, you have it, whether it's, you know, a date and then a building and then a vendor or something like that in your naming convention. But anything that you can do to separate and keep everything in like a central location, and you build out that file structure, then you start to build out your own historical data. And then knowing quickly where that's at, right? Because there's no possible way that anybody can retain all of that information, all the historical data, all the jobs that, you know, you and I might have done together years ago. You're never going to remember that. So I think being able to know where you put it and resort back to it and then pick it up quickly is really one of the keys to success. Because if you try and memorize it, you're going to lose it.
Sure.
Right. No, there's no way around that. If you think back to anything, if I go back to my last job, it was only probably 14 or 15 months ago that I left there. I don't remember hardly anything about that facility. I'm sure if I started digging through, I'd remember a lot of stuff. But, you know, you remember the bullet points, certain jobs that you did. But when you start looking back at it and you have that file structure and you start combing through, it starts bringing back all those memories and the kind of chronological order that you did things. And then it kind of rebuilds that way. So
sure.
I think really just knowing where you put the data, having the data, taking it in, organizing it, and being able to resort back to it, it's huge.
That's a very common theme. We've all heard it through the years, right? And so is this a company-specific type of thing? Is this a Shane Verity organization system? You know, is it where does that come from? How do you utilize it?
I've had multiple, I guess, bosses, mentors, people that have helped me out over the years that all kind of added little bits to it. I can think back to one person that really drove it home, like really made it almost painful for me. Like, you know, you have all this stuff, you have so much information, but you need to put it in a way that you can access it quickly. And I remember it was so painful to get used to doing it the same way every time, right? Because you're moving, you're going 100 miles an hour, you need to save this, you have to, you know, send out who knows how many emails, and trying to take the time to name everything exactly and put it in the right folder was very tough. But then so many times, right, you get put on the spot in a meeting. It's like, you know, hold on one second, I've got that. And you pull it up. And I remember going back a couple months later and he was like, see, it helps, doesn't it? Like, you know, I hate to have to tell somebody that they were right, but you're right. As painful as it is, you know, give credit where it's due sometimes.
That right. Painful lesson still paying off for you, right?
Yep. But, you know, it helps. And now I preach that to people all the time. Build a file structure. Put it all somewhere. Get it off of your own personal drive because, you know, you get that proverbial bus type situation.
Sure.
Right? If I get hit by a bus tomorrow, where is that information going to go?
Or right.
Your computer dies and it's all on your desktop. Now you just got to get it all to a central location. And I've been through many different iterations of bosses and different kind of structures in my departments that I've worked in over the years. And that's one thing that you really start to analyze over time is when you step into a role, how did your predecessor organize things? Right. And you can tell a lot about somebody by the way that they organize things, and you need to learn to go back and leverage their system as well, because now it's something, hey, 2 or 3 years ago we did this, and we need to use that information. If you don't know where to find it or how to find it, it can be difficult. I mean, I've spent some time just since I've got to Albany going through and just getting to know people's file structures from before and even moving some of it around so that I can use that in the future.
Wow. Yeah, that's a whole other aspect of it, right? Integrating the two.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's, again, that is only as good as being able to find it.
Sure, sure.
Right? You can put all the data in the world out there, but if you can't find it and access it, then it's not worth anything.
That leads me to another question. Now you've got me thinking, how do you best share that data with other departments? Because you and I have always talked about how, you know, interdepartmental communication, things like that. And are there any best practices around sharing of information, whether it be the method or the content?
So I think that comes down to really communication strategies, right? And everybody has a different way that they communicate. And that almost turns into another role. There's people in every organization whose job is just communication. And so through some of the project management, I've learned skills like that. And part of it, I think, is picking apart your audience and understanding who you're trying to talk to, right? We have a very technical way that we address things in facilities. You know, you and I can look at something and we can discuss physical changes and kind of have that engineering, like we have a vision and we can see it. And some people can't. So I think you have to understand your audience before you can address that communication, because you have to know how to present it.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
With you, I can spit out technical data and we can kind of walk to an area and say, look, this is our existing conditions. This is what we want to do. With other people, sometimes you have to do, you know, color-coded maps. These are the areas that I'm going to be working in. And and this is what you can expect to see, and you really have to draw a picture for them. Some people do better with just bullet points posted on a common, you know, a bulletin board or the exit door when they're leaving the building at the end of the day, and they say, oh, geez, tomorrow, the 23rd of February, this exit's going to be closed. Right? So you have to kind of know what the best practice is and not overdo it with information too. Right? Some people are going to see a sign that has 500 lines and all these little bullet points, and they're not going to read them all.
So. Yeah, that's an interesting point. I love what you're talking about, because I'm almost thinking, it's personality traits. You're really understanding, yeah, what a person is made up of and how they absorb, digest, and communicate information.
Absolutely. I mean, I work with people, absolutely brilliant people all the time. We have so many highly talented, you know, scientists and people that work through our legal departments and our corporate offices, and they're all very, very highly intelligent people, but they have different strengths. And some of them, you know, you start talking to them about how you're going to renovate an office, and this wall is going to go away, and we're going to move this wall, and we're going to build some offices over here, and they just can't see it because that's not how their brain works, you know?
Mm-hmm. That makes total sense.
So you have to kind of understand that. You have to really know your audience and how to communicate with them. I guess there's a little bit of psychology that goes along with our job as well.
There is. I'll share a very quick example of this with you, Shane. It was a long time customer now. And I went in with this big presentation, right? And I had all this data, and I was flooding so much information, I hadn't read the audience. I was talking to two engineers who just wanted the bottom line three bullets. And once those were delivered, they went into action. So I'll never forget that. And then that's what you're speaking about, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, sometimes I get the same thing. I'll ask somebody a very simple question. And, you know, so is this going to be done tomorrow, or are we going to go into next week? And you get into this 10-minute conversation about something, and it's like, you know, that was a really long yes or no. Sometimes I just need the high level. I really appreciate the technical data, and I feed off of that. But sometimes, you know, you need to think back and understand, what was the question, and did I answer it?
Sure. Yeah.
You know,
am I giving the whole story without answering the question first?
Yep.
That's awesome. I've been fortunate enough, of course, to be through your facility quite a few times, and every time I go through, I notice one thing, a lot of things, but there's one thing that stands out: organization, cleanliness, everything's tidy. Like it's a very organized and compartmentalized, if you will, environment. How do you achieve that? How do you
feel that way? Because as I live there more and more, I see the little things that stick out that I don't like. So I like to hear that from the outside. I mean, a lot of it, you know, you get it just from trying to create efficiencies a lot of the time, right? If you know where your tools are, if you know where your supplies are, you're going to do your job quicker. Every time you have to stop, and you know this, right? It can go all the way back to tinkering around the house on a weekend.
Sure.
You turn around and, geez, where did I put that wrench? I'm not sure. Next thing you know, it's 45 minutes later. You're in the garage. You're talking to your neighbor, you know, and you never get back to your project. So you learn those efficiencies, and that turns into the whole 5S thing, right? You have things marked, you know where things go, there's a place for everything. And so I think that's huge. And then the other side of it is routine PMs. I mean, if you're not doing a PM, if you're not making somebody responsible for it, it's going to fail. I've always thought that with common toolboxes, tool cribs, things like that. When somebody isn't responsible for it, it's going to fail.
Mm. Yep.
Right. So of course, that's really the only way to do it. We have certain people whose job is to maintain, whether it's just to clean the floor or you own this area and this area has to be compliant. Then, you know, you all set those guidelines around it.
All aspects of that area, Shane, is that from machinery to?
Well, yeah. And so everybody's going to have a different responsibility, right? So the people that run production, they're responsible for the production areas, and they have to maintain their organization. They have to maintain it because they have to work in it, right? When it comes down to our shop, If the shop is a mess, it's not the guy in production's responsibility. It's the maintenance team's responsibility.
Sure.
And then there's some general stuff all over. You know, we have weekly PMs. One of the last items that gets done every week is somebody hops on the floor washer and washes the floors in the building. It's just the little things like that. But, you know, if you don't get them done and you don't make somebody responsible for it, it will slip away.
Sure.
It's human nature, right? Oh, if I don't like doing this one task, I'm going to find a reason not to. But if I have to check a box and say I did it and put my name on it and I'm going to be held accountable for it, then I'm going to do it.
Yeah. It reminds me of the saying, if it gets measured, it gets done.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You're accountable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. That now, you know, gets me thinking about our conversations over the years about compliance and, you know, oversight and regulation and inspections. And, you know, I know we've talked about OSHA, we've talked about other regulatory authorities. And would you like to expand on that at all? Because I think, is it related? I mean, cleanliness and organization.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's OSHA regulations that go along with every job site, right? So there's certain things that you absolutely have to have in place. You have to have fire extinguishers. You have to have safety showers. Every one of those things has clearances. You know, you can't put things in front of electrical panels. And then you start kind of 5S-ing the area and putting down floor markings, and that drives another level. If I can't put something here, where do I put it? Right? So you kind of play off of those things. And there's NFPA regulations that drive certain things in a facility, how it has to be laid out. You know, my current facility is an FM Global insured site. And so FM Global offers great premiums, but you have to also, you know, conform to their standards, and their standards can be very high as well. So there's a lot of things that you have to, you know, follow and that you have to understand. And so we put PMs around all of that stuff to make sure that we're complying with it, right? It's very easy if, and this can go back to really any situation in life, it's very easy if you do it constantly, every week, every month, to keep things in line. It's very difficult if you let it get away from you. And then all of a sudden, you know, you do it once a year, right? It's like cleaning out the garage in the spring or whatever that task is. It gets overwhelming if you don't do it a lot. But if you go
it's monumental. Yep.
Yeah. You go back after one job and you put your wrenches away, you put this can of spray paint away, you put whatever you're working with away, and it adds up. And then when you start putting those regulations around it, certain things have to be stored certain ways, and, you know, certain areas that we have to have dedicated to whatever it is, chemicals, flammables, things like that. And, you know, once you have a set of guidelines, set of rules around it, there's no gray area.
Does this fall under the same umbrella of the PMs? Like, is this a PM program as well? And who oversees it, if so?
I mean, some of it absolutely is a PM program. And some of it's not. Some of it's just that we know we have certain regulations that are going to be inspected, say when we have our FM Global inspector come in. Or when we have, you know, I can think of some other ones, like when we have our quarterly fire protection PM. You know, they're going to go into our fire pump room. And if there's a lot of things in there that aren't supposed to be in there, combustible materials, things like that, you know, you're going to hear about it, and then you have to find a new place for it. So we maintain those on a weekly PM and check this room, check that room, make sure it's free of objects that aren't supposed to be there, make sure things are organized. So again, it's really just understanding what your challenges are, what your regulations are, drawing a box around it. Because if you have an activity and you have to check a box, it'll get done.
Sure. No, I'm hearing a lot of measurement, a lot of accountability, a lot of single person ownership, if I'm hearing you correctly.
Well, kind of, but I mean, it rolls, I guess, back uphill at that point, right? You delegate downhill and the responsibility rolls uphill. So you have to check that it's actually getting done. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, when you make it a black and white type of situation, the answer, right? There's a yes or a no.
Right.
There's no maybe, because of, except for, did you do it? Yes or no.
Hmm. Very clean cut.
Yeah.
Very clear. Yep. anything else around, like, you know, your whole facility and how it operates? And like, this is, I think the listeners are probably really picking up a lot of these best practices from you. What might I be forgetting to ask, Shane?
Well, I mean, that's the standard everyday operation, right? But that's not the, I need this, I want this, or, you know, say a safety concern comes up mm-hmm. and somebody says, oh, you know, this is a trip hazard, we have to change this, or I can't think of anything immediately off the top that would be easy to expand on, but there's so many little instances where something comes up and it seems like a very easy, hey, we have to change this, right? And a lot of people would jump on that, but when there's a regulation around something, you say, hey, we can't necessarily change that because this particular material has to be stored in a cabinet, or this particular area has to maintain, you know, ADA compliance, or whatever those parameters are. There's always the different perspectives, right? I can go back to when I was in pharmaceutical.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we always had our epoxy floors in the clean rooms, and those epoxy floors, when you get certain kinds of materials on them, get very slippery. Then you have a slip and a fall, and safety comes out and says, well, that's easy. The floor is too slick, so you need to put texture on it. But then when you put texture on it, QC comes out and they say, well, geez, you know, our readings are coming up high. You have a little bit more, you know, bacteria over here because you have now a profile that's going to harbor that, and it's harder to clean. So it's not always that one perspective that, hey, we can just change this. You have to get everybody around it and understand what kind of parameters you have there.
Managing different priorities. Yes, 100%. It absolutely does. Yeah.
And again, understanding why things are the way that they are.
What do you mean by that?
Well, there's rules that go into buildings. There's building codes. There's OSHA, you know, construction, OSHA general industry. There's requirements around how things are built. So you can't just look at it and say, geez, we had one issue here, we need to change everything. You know, just because there is a trip over an object on the floor, it doesn't mean that you can just jackhammer out the floor and change it.
Right. Sure. No, it totally makes sense. Absolutely.
Staircase gets in the way a little bit, so maybe we should put a vertical ladder, but, you know, vertical ladders have their own parameters around them. Then you can be causing another safety issue down the road that you're not looking at. So,
fair to say you have a bit to think about every day.
Yeah, a little bit.
As you walk through.
But, it caters to, again, it goes back to, it's a trait, I think, a personal trait. Because that's how my mind works. I'm all over the place. I'm constantly moving. I'm like a shark, right? If I sit still, I feel like I'm going to die. I just can't do it. So I think it helps having so many things going around because it keeps you sharp. It keeps you on your toes. It keeps you moving. You have to constantly be learning something, addressing something, talking to somebody, juggling multiple tasks. That's
absolutely. That's awesome. I mean, I know we're learning a ton from you right now, and you know, I don't know if there's anything else we should touch on, Shane. But I mean, in terms of like that's a lot of really useful information right there. So I just want to back way up though with data collection and use of it. That's universal regardless of your industry, I believe.
Yep.
And it sounds like it doesn't really matter what system you use as long as you consistently use it and you can access it quickly.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that is the biggest thing that you just touched on, right, is consistency. Because you can put together a budget sheet, but if you don't maintain it, it's never going to work, right? Because then I can fall back on it and I don't have this one invoice that just came in, or I don't have, you know, this latest change order, and then it's going to throw your entire budget off. So you have to be able to update stuff consistently. If you have a rail that you're working on for a project, it's only as good as keeping up with those notes, whether it's a daily update or a weekly update or anything like that. So yeah, I think, you know, consistency is huge with that. And that really rolls into, that's a huge struggle, I think, of mine, is the time management and making sure that I hit those things that absolutely have to be done. because it is very easy to hear the loudest person that's saying, I need this right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that person that called out and trying to figure out what you have to do to cover them, or that ceiling that just collapsed when your sewer was backed up. And, you know, it's really easy to fall into that trap. And then next thing you know, you forget to approve invoices. You forget to, you know, clean up your meeting minutes, and you forget to fill out your lessons learned from a project or a job that you just did.
Sure.
So yeah, I think the consistency is huge there.
Great stuff, man. Great stuff.
And sometimes that's a tool that you have to use too, is just block off, meeting in your calendar. Mm-hmm. Once a week, once every couple of days, whatever it is. And people don't need to know that that's not a meeting, but you have to just sit there and say, all right, what are those items that I never get to do unless I make time for?
I call that buffer time. I literally call it buffer time on my calendar, but I like your idea. It's a meeting, so now others may not feel as though they can intrude on it.
I'm not available right now. You know, right. You have to make it not available. Otherwise, sure. Somebody will take that time. If you try and build, I've learned that for years. You try and build time into your calendar for anything. If I say I'm going to take a day off and I don't put that in my calendar, I'll get some earth-shattering, business-critical meeting that will fall on that day, and that's the only day that it can happen. it's Murphy's Law, right? So you just have to block out that time and don't let anybody get it.
That works. You shared that with me about maybe 2 years ago. It stuck with me and I forgot. So thank you for the reminder and the tactic. Yeah. Call it a meeting.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
I am unavailable.
So you've been teaching us. Now, can we learn a little bit about Shane Verity?
Yeah. What do you want to know? I'm an open book, Jay. You know that.
I do. And I'm excited to talk about it. Let's back up the years a little bit, maybe. Like, start there and say, I don't know, Shane's 15. What's Shane like? You know, how's he different today than what he was then?
Oh, boy. I don't know if we want to know 15-year-old Shane.
We could pick another year.
I never really had a direction that I thought I wanted to go in life, right? This whole facilities thing just kind of fell in my lap because of skills that I learned back then. So I grew up in a family where my grandfather wasn't very educated formally, and he got into real estate and he did incredibly well for himself. And so he was always trying to flip a house or, you know, managing multiple properties. And so I picked up a lot of those technical skills through whatever it was, just getting an apartment ready for the first of the month, or doing a little bit of groundwork outside. And so my whole life, I guess, I just kind of grew up around that and learning those technical skills and figuring, hey, this is probably the direction I'm going to go in, right? And then one thing happens, another thing happens. I don't know if you know this, but real estate's pretty expensive, so you have to have a lot of money for that to get into.
A little bit.
Yeah. So there's a couple things like that, you know, just kind of get in the way. And I ended up getting a job in facilities maintenance, just like super entry level kind of stuff, because that was what was available at the time. It's just paint walls, fix door handles, replace light bulbs, that kind of stuff. And it just grew from there, because obviously once you get the opportunity to show some sort of skill that you have, it opens the door to something else. And then it really kind of presents itself as the next opportunity, right? Can you learn something? Can you pick up on something? Is there some sort of window open that you could sneak through and turn it into something bigger?
Very
I think,
true.
You know, 15-year-old Shane probably thought that it was going to be owning apartment houses and stuff like that, and it couldn't be further from the truth.
But it sounds like it inspired you, though, and I love that story about your grandfather. And overcoming a challenge.
And, you know, my dad as well was a very skilled carpenter. And so he built houses. He was constantly doing renovation type projects and stuff. So I think my grandfather was a little bit more on the 10,000 foot kind of run the project. My dad was a little bit more in the trenches with his tool belt on doing the work, right? So you learn a little bit more of the practical skills, finish skills, the finesse of it from my dad. And you learn kind of the order of operations and how to manage a project and how to cram all the right resources in and manage the different trades from my grandfather. So thinking I was going to go in this direction and learning all that stuff was great. Never, ever really realizing that there was a whole industry of, you know, facilities management out there and project management. Just never really crossed my mind. I never had that kind of exposure to it. So it really just kind of became a strength in a direction that I didn't know that I was going to go or wanted to go or could go. Or, I mean, if you would ask me when I was 15, if I was going to end up in, you know, aerospace or pharmaceuticals, I'm like, how in the heck is that going to happen? But here I am.
So. And here you are. Absolutely. And highly successful at it too.
And still learning stuff every day, still learning new things that I can apply. And, you know, thankful to have people around like you that run these kind of networking opportunities that we can meet other people and learn from other people's experiences and other people's strengths. So,
no, and I appreciate the groups that we're in too. It's you're right. You're always learning. You just reminded me of the your constant thirst that I mentioned in the very beginning about technology and like, hey, what's new? Like, what? How can I better do that? How can I do that with different material or different tools or in a different method or whatever it was? I mean, you shared that years ago when we first met. I love that, you know, that's that thirst for knowledge or just what I heard from you, and correct me if I'm wrong, a better, more efficient way to do something.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because that's another one that goes back to my grandfather. He was a really quirky, interesting, very polarizing person, right? Mm-hmm. I think people either loved him or they hated him. He just had a very strong personality and he was very, very set in, this is how we're going to do something. And unless you can show me that it works better in a different way, this is how we're going to do it. But I always got that part from him, right? That there is another way. You just have to show me.
Mm.
And because if you could show him that, if you could demonstrate that, hey, I do have another way and it works, he'd, okay, that's fine. And he'd just leave you alone. And so that always kind of opened up the opportunity. And he came up with some very interesting methods to get through stuff. So it just kind of always opened that mindset of like, there's not a one size fits all. There's always another way. There's always a way to get it done. I mean, he used to often say like, don't tell me I can't do something. Tell me how I can do it.
Oh, right? I love what you just said. I love what you just said. It's written on our whiteboard. That's a mindset right there.
It is. It's huge, right? It's the open versus the fixed mindset. Don't tell me I can't do it. Just help me figure out how I can, right? And you don't have to do bad things to get to that. It's just, if I can't do it this way, how can we get there? I know the end result that I want to achieve.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
So it just opens it up, right? I mean, I don't claim to be highly intelligent, super talented, best at anything. I know a little bit about a lot of stuff, enough to kind of get me into it and know what direction I need to go. And then you pick things up from people.
Then you figure it out and you're creative and you, well, it goes right back to adaptability, agility, pivot.
It's problem solving, right? And yes. You put a problem in front of me and my mind just wants to pick it apart. How do I solve this? And that goes down to anything. I can't walk past a jigsaw puzzle without wanting to just sit down until you get a piece, right?
Ooh, that's a good one. Wow.
It's just who I am.
I like I just caught two threads, right, Shane? It's the driver's ed example and the things you learned from your grandfather. And the reason I bring that up, look what we learn at such a young age that affects our lives in so many different ways.
I mean, I think you learn almost everything at a young age, right? Mm. And I have a 12-year-old son that absolutely baffles me every single day with the stuff that he comes up with, right? He's at that age now. He's in sixth grade. And it's starting to go more into the adolescent stage where he wants to fight the system, right? I don't like school. Sure. I don't want to do that. But the problem, and it's the most frustrating and amazing thing as a parent, right? Because it's frustrating. He fights things. And sometimes it's like, man, it's just because I said so, that's why, you know, because I'm your parent.
Good luck with that.
I know, right? And then he formulates these absolutely amazing responses. And he's like, well, you know, Dad, statistics show that you're going to lose 94% of what you learn in school anyways. So what does it matter if I go there, if I focus on things that I really like? And I'm like, you know, God, you're so right.
I don't have the answer for that.
But I can't tell you that to your face and let you win. Like, you just need to go.
I've heard similar things. It's amazing how logic of children and the way they walk us down that path is so frustrating. It's a gift. Let's say it's a gift.
It is.
Yeah,
it is. Absolutely. And so that just goes back to that overall statement that you made, right? We learn so much when we're young. You learn how to read people, how to read their body language, how to, you know, you start to develop, I guess, the ability to pick apart personality traits, right? You see different sides of people in front of different people and you realize, oh, maybe this person isn't quite who they say they are. Maybe they are. You learn about integrity, right? Does this person act the same in front of every single person that you encounter?
That's a big one right there. Yep.
And you take that with you.
Yes.
I think some of your biggest skills, right, are things that you just... you inherit or you absorb when you're younger like that. The rest of it's kind of, I don't want to say trivial knowledge because it's all important, but the rest of it's knowledge. It's not instinct, right?
Yes. Yeah. You learn the foundational stuff, the what really matters. Yeah. At an early age. Well, I'll tell you, man, I don't know. We could probably go on for days, but
worth it. And every time we get on the phone, you and I, we spend an hour, we spend whatever it is.
We just go. It's always dynamic. It's we're not quite sure where it might end up, and that's the beauty of it. And that's why I appreciate the time.
But yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Every opportunity that I get to chat with you, because I feel like I always learn something, or we just always have a great, you know, great conversation. Right? It stimulates some sort of thought, some sort of new topic, and sometimes we start off on one thing and we end up so far in left field. But
every
it's
time.
Always a good, it's a great conversation. So
likewise, Shane. Likewise. Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you, man, people probably want to get in touch with you. So is there a best way to do so? We can post it on the pod when it goes live and, you know, where could people find you if they wanted to ask you more questions?
I'm on LinkedIn. To be honest with you, that's probably where I'm the most accessible. I'm not huge on social media. I really kind of strive to stay away from it, to be honest with you, and not in like a negative connotativity. I just try and keep myself from becoming engrossed in something like that can take you in the wrong direction. So I think LinkedIn is probably the best place that you can get me.
Perfect. Shane Verity on LinkedIn. Well, you can look him up. And it was a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much, Shane. And to everyone else listening, go ahead. Sorry.
Very thankful that you invited me and humbled that you think of me when you want to do a podcast. To be honest, it is humbling to think that that my name pops into your head. So I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today, Jay.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. The pleasure's mine. Be good and have a wonderful afternoon. I'll talk to you very
absolutely.
Soon.
You All right. as well. We will be in touch soon.
It's a wrap. Another episode of Facility Rockstars is in the books. Facility Rockstars is sponsored by Colutus, operating the way you operate in order to make your life easier. Until next time, facilitate and rock on. Rock on.